Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
Survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
Okay, hey, welcome to Prepping Academy. I am Forrest, your host. This evening we got an unbelievable guest. I've been waiting to interview this gentleman for years. I've read his books. I've been following him. I know that him and Daisy are good friends. Everybody knows who Daisy is here in the PrepperNet Academy. But we have Selco online, and I've got questions. Some of you guys sent me questions, which I'll be asking as well. But I am so looking forward to this, and it's been, like I said, been a long time coming. So, hey, welcome, Selco, to the Prepping Academy. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Yeah, it is good to be here, and hello to everybody else who listened this.
Awesome, awesome. So, I mean, I'll tell you why. You don't pick up your book and just, you know, read it on the beach thinking you're going to have a glorious day. With a fun read, would you say?
No, not really. But yeah, there's a whole philosophy of what's wrong with survival today in your question, actually. And shortest answer to that is that real survival is not something that you can read on a beach while hanging out. I mean, you can, but it might ruin your day, if that makes sense. Real survival is usually, it's always not what you imagine, and it is it is dark and hard. So it is what it is. Because of that, it is real. It is real stuff, if that makes sense to you.
So to give everyone that doesn't know who you are, which I can imagine no one does at this point, but you were survival of, we call it a lot of times the Yugoslavian War, same as the Balkan War. I guess they're the same event. Am I correct there?
Yes, it is same event. Actually, to be more precise, Yugoslav War was actually several smaller wars that lasted for, I believe, something about 10 years, something like that. Yes. So all of that can be called Balkan or Yugoslav war or wars. Yes.
And that was in the 90s, correct? Early 90s?
Yes, early 90s to early 2000. Yes.
10 okay. Years. So the time frame that we're going to be talking a lot about you and what you survived through, was that in like 93 area?
Yes, 92-93 area. Actually, those 2 years were most intense, but it mm-hmm. lasted altogether about 5 years. It was, in short, civil war, and it was chaos that most of the people should have in mind when they talk about survival. There is a thing that people say, oh, it is civil war. We are never going to experience that. Well, in the last few years, we can question even that statement. But to rephrase it, maybe you are not going to experience civil war like I experienced it. But point is in experiencing a situation where you have more people than resources. After you experience that moment with more people than resources, most of the scenarios go in similar direction. It doesn't matter, is it civil war or, let's say, asteroid impact. Mm-hmm. Let's say it like that, because most of the scenarios from that moment lead into the same direction, and that direction is fight for the resources. It is simplified, but it is true. It is simple old fight for resources.
So you wrote a book on this, and the book we're talking about, at least the one that I've read at least twice now, is The Dart Secrets of HTF Survival.
Yes, The Dark Secrets of SHTF Survival. Basically, what I did, and I need to step back a few steps. I read, I believe, 13 years ago on some survival forum, some survivalist describing how real SHTF going to look. And after I read that topic, I realized that it is absolutely and completely wrong. So from that moment, I started to write articles about my SHTF experience and what I experienced. And all those articles at the end end up in this book. Book is actually consisted of my experience in that war, which can be brought down to the simple to the essence of more people than resources, just like I mentioned mm-hmm. before. You can say there's a lot of differences between society in Yugoslavia in 19th and society in, let's say, US today. And I agree. But when something bad happen, always you are going to have good old violence and people fighting for resources, no matter what his background story about. So yeah, basically that book is about my experiences from that war, and I wrote it based on how survivalists today expecting SHTF will look. So I took my most important experiences and uh-huh. put it in that book. Actually, most of the book is my everyday problems and solving of those problems, everyday dangers, my life in those okay. years.
It's kind of like interesting. That. On the front, it looks like a blood splat, and it says warning, graphic content. So you're warning people right out of the front, and then the kind of the subtitle is the brutal truth about violence, death, mayhem you must know to survive. And I think the overall thing that if someone asked me, what's the book about? And I would sum it up like this, and tell me if I'm wrong. Your glorification of war and bugging out and having to live through the SHTF is nowhere near what is reality.
Exactly. You are right. And even that warning graphic content, I was surprised by the fact that even experienced preppers worldwide find out that some of the stuff that I talk about are hard to believe mm-hmm. or not imaginable to them. I'll give you one simple example. When you're mentioning trade, which is very, very high on a topic list among the preppers, trade, most of the preppers 10 or 12 years ago, imagine it like good old happy hippie people gathering up somewhere and trading their items, which in reality, in real SHTF situation, completely wrong. As soon as we have some valuable resources to trade for, you are in danger of getting killed in order to take that resource taken away from you. And everything forward from that fact is more danger, more danger, more danger. And I can say that 90% of other topics are not completely false. I cannot say that everything is false, but 19% of other survival topics are romanticized, if that makes sense to you.
So they're not going to have tables down the local corner and everybody bring your goods and trade?
Yeah, it can happen. I mean, it can happen in some well-organized survival community in small town. Right. So it is not like, I'm not saying it is impossible, but let's face it, 19% of us are not going to have and be in some very well-organized small survival community. Most of us will be in more dangerous situation.
So the more supplies, you have, the more danger you're in.
Yeah, if other people know about that.
Yes.
So by fact of that, trade is one of the most dangerous activity. Mm-hmm. I agree, which have to be done, of course, but right. not on the way that people imagine it.
Okay. I do want to mention everyone as we're getting started here. His website, it's called shtfschool.com. We want to get out there, but it's shtfschool.com. So go visit that. You have training on there. You have a lot of information on there. So I wanted to get that out before we get really big into this. So one of the things I caught in the book is that it seemed like you were kind of mad at yourself because you didn't see the signs until it was too late. And it was almost, I could just feel in your writing that you're kind of mad that you didn't see the signs until it was too late and couldn't get out. Is that kind of how it happened?
Absolutely. Yes. I can say that all of the signs were there, but excuse me, there is something in human nature in all of us that we always want to believe that, it is not going to happen to us, that bad thing. And it's somehow all going to end up on a good way. So, yes, all of the signs were there. If I sat down and go through all of that signs with my mind that I have today, I would clearly realize and conclude that something really bad is going to happen very soon. But with my mindset from those days, I just pushed back those signs, and my constant thought in that time was, however this sounds ridiculous today, my constant thought was this, people are not so bad. And after years of that experiences and after years of prepping, I rephrase it and change that thought into the thought where most of the people are bad, or most of the people can be bad if situation ask that from them. What does this mean? Your next door neighbor is great guy, but if their kids are hungry and he knows you have food, he will be bad towards you because his kids are more important to you than you are. So is he a good guy? Yes. Is he a bad guy to you? Yes. So most of the people can be bad, and most of the people will be bad if situation ask that from them. While I believed in those times that most of the people are good folks and these bad signs going to disappear and all going to be fine. So yes, I was a common young man believing that everything going to be fine and bad things cannot happen to me. And I have one thought that civil wars, genocides happen only in some weird countries, in weird part of the world, right, without mentioning now any part of the world. So in some weird part of the world where people are different, folks are pretty much same everywhere. We are pretty much same. Even if you take all of our differences, we are pretty much same when it comes to this thing. So bad things are possible everywhere.
So I know that when this happened to you in your country, you were very positive and you were kind of missing the signs. My biggest concern is for Americans, because I'm not saying that we have it much better than you guys did back then, but food's more, available. I mean, everything. I think people, they're hopium. They're going to hope that U.S. will get through something and they will be exactly kind of like you were. And they'll just wait to the end and just think that things are going to get too bad and they're going to be stuck. I mean, we have a lot of confidence in, in America and our abilities and our government. But I think when things turn, it's going to be pretty quickly, and it's going to be, everyone's still going to count on the government. I think that's one of our biggest dangers, is being overconfident that that kind of thing cannot happen to America?
For several reasons, I cannot and I will not go into the political and society situation in your country right now, but I can compare it to situation in my country in those years, and you can see similarities. While it was completely different because I grew up in a communistic society, so it's absolutely different than your society over there. But I was grow up in society when you as an individual were taught to believe in system, period. System will take care about everything. And if you question system, you will, let's say, disappear in worst case scenario. But system will did usually take care about everything, and we all thought that system is hard, hard as a rock, is that expression, stable, completely and absolutely stable, and ready to take care about everything. And one day system collapsed, because it was rotten from inside. There is a difference from those days and today. In fact, that, people are more, everywhere, not only here, everywhere, people have more access to information. 30 years ago, you didn't have, even there in US, you didn't have so much, access to so different kind of information. Today you have. So you could conclude that, since you have more information access, you are going to be able to recognize more, quicker recognize more and more signs, coming signs. But in reality, it is false, because there is so much junk of information everywhere that people are not really sure, on the first place, not really sure where to look. And the second place, those in power who control media have so much power, actually, that they bombard average folks with information, and folks are mesmerized to that, let's say, screen of government-owned information. So is it better from 30 years ago? Yes, there are more information, but is it worse because there is more propaganda? Yes. It is worse. It is more information, but propaganda is heavier. So it is even worse. On the other side, society today and system and society today offer us more ways to live a happier and more comfort life. So as a result of that, you have a bigger percent of people who do not know how to start fire, even with lighter. So is it better life today than 30 years ago? Yes. Is it going to be bigger fall when it all fall apart? Yes. Because 30 years ago, you still have people who remember hard times from Second World War.
They've lived through hard times before.
Yes. Yeah. Old timers who remember times of Great Depression, or remember it from the stories of their parents. What people remember today, young people, young folks, old folks in middle age, I'm worried about what real knowledge they have if they're not prepper. They do not have real knowledge, most of them.
Yep. So one thing I will say, people always ask me, you believe in zombies? And I always say, yes. If you're 25 and below and you're going through a war like that, you're going to be walking around like, what the heck is going on? That's my zombie in the SHTF. But you talk about a lot in your book about information is so important, and how disinformation, even like you were talking about in there, I think they were talking like, they're going to be dropping MREs on the south side of the city. Just information itself is almost impossible to know the truth, to get the truth. And it was probably one of the most needed things beside food and water, things like that. But information was very important and very hard to come by, the truth, because of the media and other people just telling, not knowing the truth. Is that correct?
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering two convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at preppernet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at preppernet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
Yes. Excuse me. We can look at on information. When you talk about information, we need to look at it from two sides. First thing is real information for real purpose. That mean, for example, that mean where you can find food tonight, or who have baby formula and you need baby formula tonight for your baby, and you don't have a clue who have baby formula in your neighborhood. So you need that information, and how you will find that information. Well, for purpose of this conversation, shortest answer will be that you need to have, just like you mentioned, you need to have prior to SHTF, you need to have a network of people, and you need to have already that information. So real information that you can use was very, very important. And that information was used in many different terms. Let's say, I'll give you one real example from my times. A man who have a stash of food hidden hijacked from UN forces and hidden hid it for more times to for more days to bring price up and he deliberately planted information that some stash of food on the other guy who have it was infested. This is like really small example of how disinformation and information work. In real SHTF event, you need information, but in same time, you cannot trust any information. And only real cure to this is to have a network of people, because network of people means in same time, network of trusted information. How you can build that network of people? Well, best case scenario is to build it before something bad happened, because on that way, you know that people for sure. When something bad happened, you will be forced to build network of people, of course, because you cannot survive alone. But any man that you add to that network of people will be possible danger to you, because before you verify him, if this makes sense. So this is the one side of that information thing. Other side is a matter of hope. We as a human beings are addicted to information. And we are not aware of that today, because we are plugged in information system every day. Even let's say preppers or survivalists who are aware how much false information is outside, even us are plugged in into the trusted information. So imagine the world one day when electricity, internet, everything is just one day is off, and you are missing that information. It is blow to human mind, and it is horrific. It is horrible, and you cannot imagine it if you did not experience it. So, and there is no vacuum there where there is no real information. Misinformation take place, and even misinformation is important from the point of that hope thing. While I need to say one or two more sentences about hope. Hope can be a bad thing, so do not lean too much on hope. But when we talk about this subject, information and misinformation is needed for your mindset to have some kind of, let me put it like this. In that time, I survived day by day. I just do my job every day for today and plan it for tomorrow. I didn't plan it for too long into the future, because I probably, if I point my direction too much into the future, I might lost my mind, because there was nothing there. Just same thing, black, if that makes sense. But right. You still need some kind of carefully, dosed hope. In some other world, you can call it religion. If you're religious man, religion work as a hope, of course. But be careful how to use that hope, because too much hope can lead you to forgetting important stuff in basics of survival, and you can lose your life. To shorten more this answer, information was not only important because of the using it in real purpose, for example, where to find food or wood for your stove, but it was also used for keeping yourself sane, if that makes sense.
Yes. So you mentioned networking, and it was better to be kind of networked with people beforehand. And so I guess, do you know of any people that actually did network before all this happened, and how they fared through the situation, or was there nothing like that at that time?
Nothing like that. Nothing like, let's say, survival group that we understand it today. Uh-huh. Nothing really prepared like that.
Okay.
Closest to that would be some military units that went rogue and formed a local militia group. Closest to that, but even that was not a carefully prepared survival group. What we used actually, we simply, let's say, built survival group based on what we had most common in that time. In my case, it was based on blood, on relatives, on right. family. So mm-hmm. we formed a group based on family because we trusted each other, and whichever skill we find useful between ourselves, well, it worked what we have. So we didn't prepare based on survival and prepping before events. We just formed a group when all started based on trust, which I suggest always. When you build a group today, if you cannot form a closest group based on your blood, you form it based on a friendship or based on your knowing, you knowing somebody for a long time, and he having a lot of skills or important skill, and he's on same page with you when it comes to prepping. Preppers usually make mistakes here, so they look for the folks when they form prepper groups. So they look for the folks who have same opinion about what will happen. So let me use example. Guy believe that America going to be collapsed based on economic collapse or some other particular scenario. I always give advice that you do not look for the prepper groups or members of the prepper groups based on particular scenario. He doesn't need to be on same page about scenario with you. It's not really important.
Right.
It is important that he is prepper. Now, is he believe that world is going to collapse because of aliens or because of Russians or because of tsunami? It is not really important. While he is on same page about skills, and I will say same page about with morality, is that correct expression?
Yes.
You don't want to have a psychomaniac with you in group if you are a normal person, if that makes sense. So morality, say morality, moral code, yes, makes sense, of course.
Okay.
You don't want really a serial killer to have in your group, of course.
The Prepping Academy Podcast. What are you prepping for?
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
You're listening to The Prepping Academy, the information you need before the world ends.
So the idea of prepping and prepping for the SHTF is way more important than what people believe is actually going to happen. Just being prepared, having the skills, having the tools. Would you say that if you were in a group that y'all knew this would come in, would you have fared well, you know, got out through it better, would you say? Do you wish you would have had a group beforehand? Would it have been better for you?
Well, yes. Yes, of course.
Okay.
We managed. We survived. Most of us survived. But some of the stuff we learned on our mistakes, and learning on your own mistakes during SHTF, it's very wrong, because it is very dangerous situation to learn on your own mistakes, because your own mistake can be your death. So would I go into some situation easier? Of course. If I had prepped group before something happened. But again, we didn't even have a concept of that. We lived in society where society taught us on very hard way that system would take care about everything. And on the other, also we were very hard plugged in media, which bombarded us with news that everything going to be fine right to the last moment.
Did you have skills before all this happened? Meaning, were you thinking prepping? Did you have some survival skills like making fire? Did you have basic skills before all this, or did you learn it as you were going?
Yes, I had basic skills. Again, I grow up in different society. For example, in communistic society, you learn how to disassemble your rifle in when you have, I believe, 14 years, something like that, or 15 years. So you learn it in school, actually, together with bunch of the other really basic stuff. For example, how to use gas mask, how to use old style M48 rifle. But again, it was very, very basic stuff. But if you compare it with average man from Western country, yes, I had a lot of basic stuff. I knew how to start fire. Mm-hmm. I had in my family a lot of old timers who were guerrilla fighters against Germans in World War II. So I knew the stories. I knew the basics, but again, nothing that could really prepare me to that event.
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Hi, this is Ashley T. Lee Podcast. Join me to hear the Bible read line by line and clearly explained. Listen to the Word of God in your car or home or work while it transforms your mind daily. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect." Knowing the Bible can give you peace and joy in this hectic world. Listen weekly to Ashley T. Lee Podcast on all podcast sites.
Do you think you would have fared better outside the city, like on farmland, a lot of people think they're going to go to farms and maybe survive there as groups and stuff. But did the city people, in a sense, go out to that area and just kill them? Would you have fared better out in the country, or was it better because of the resources in the city to survive? Well,
yeah, here's the thing. In my time, in that particular scenario, it will be better probably in some smaller village that is bit organized in terms of defense. But I need to discuss a bit more about this, because in survival today, and it's for years in survival, there is one of the many myths that you just need to go out, run from the city, and you'll be fine when something really bad happens. Well, if you do not have anything prepared outside of that city, if you do not have some kind of weakened house with preps or some kind of small group or some knowledge about growing food and place to grow food and means to defend that place, well, it is better to stay in city if you have any kind of storage and group in that city, because people have that, people believe in that myth that when something bad happens, what you mean is just to run from the city and you'll survive in wilderness. It is absolutely and completely false. There is a few people that can survive in wilderness today, and those people are usually born and bred over there in that wilderness, and they know that wilderness like pocket, like their own pocket, how to trap, hunt, live up the woods and stuff like that. There is a very, very few folks like that, if you talk about real wilderness. I mean, forget about survival TV shows. It's not like that. So forget about running from the city and survival on your own into the wilderness. Now, if you are talking about small community in rural region, yes, I like that idea very much. And I use that actually as my bug out location for years. I have that option. But again, you need to have a group. You need to have members of that group who have knowledge. You need to have a land to live off. You need to have means to hunt, means to find water, to process water. It is not just to have a land and house and you will survive. If you're talking about some serious event, eventually that troubles from city will come to your place. So you need to have some kind of organization to defend that place. Not to mention, means to survive to that moment from that land. So, again, we are coming to the point of having your own survival group, your prepper network. Is it better to be with that group of people in rural place? Yes. But don't mix it with you alone running into the wilderness and hoping right. that you are survival, just like in some TV show. Most probably you will die in wilderness.
Right. Lone wolves, they're few and far between that can make it. And they know that the ones that are lone wolves that can make it, they were, like you said, they're born that way. They're already out there living that way. Other than that, the city folks or people, we're not going to survive like that. You also mentioned in your book, is like, hey, take the worst person you know today, the absolutely worst person, evil-minded, just devious, and just imagine everyone is like that. That's, I mean, you said that in your book, is like everyone was like that, that worst person that you knew.
It kind of blew my mind when SHGF, when that happened in my case, it kind of blew my mind how many, a lot of the people today are nice because law and system kind of forced them and put them in a system where they have to be nice. You cannot be, you cannot act like psycho today and have normal job, have family, normal life and everywhere. You are going to go into the institution, right? When you take out from that equation law and system and punishment from the system, a lot of the people simply think, oh, there is no punishment for me anymore. Mm-hmm. I can just take out my real nature, if that makes sense to you, and I can be, I can say evil. I can be evil to everybody around me, or I can simply take other folks' possession because I want that stuff. I want his car, and later I want his food. And my point here, there are a lot of people who are evil or will act on evil way on one side. And on the other side, there are a lot of people who are, which I mentioned already, a lot of people who are good folks, but they are forced to do bad things because their kids are hungry. And it's simple like that. People who didn't went through a bad situation do not realize that. There is, again, one more myth. Let's take, for example, a bad weather event, Katrina, for example, or any other bad weather event in U.S. Probably you have a situation in the first couple of hours or first day when everybody go out on their backyard or street and asking each other, oh, what is happening? How can I help you? Do you need medication and stuff like that? If that lasts for a couple of more days, even good men will think, oh, I will not mention that medication that I have in my house.
Right. I need to save neighbor, it for us.
Because I need to save it for our kid.
Right.
And if you take that couple of days even more where they realize there is no police anymore working, that common man, good man, will think, oh, my kid is lack of that medication. He can die. I will go somewhere and kill someone for that medication.
Right. Now,
maybe this doesn't make sense to you today, but it will make sense if something bad happened.
Okay. So this is just between us. I'm not going to share this with everybody else. Just kidding on that. But tell me what were like the most important things at this time? Because in the book you talk about, and I've heard you on other podcasts that, hey, if you think gold and silver is going to be a barter item, or do you think they almost turned into a shiny little disc and they weren't really worth a lot. But I mean, at some point, but what were the important things during, I would say, not the worst of times, but what was was it just plain food and water and that was it? Or were there other things that were like important that you tried to acquire?
Yes. Of course, food, water, weapon. If we take that to side and talk about other things, next thing, and probably even in sometimes even important from these things that I already mentioned was were medical items.
Medical?
Medical items, yes. Not only medical items. I know you're asking me about physical items, but I need to throw in a fact of skill, medical skills, not only medical skills, any other skills, but here medical skills, because even in that time, people were plugged into the system, into the medical system. Not everybody, most of the people did not have even basic medical knowledge. And I need to factor in another thing, hygiene items, because people, folks that are prepared, that are talk about different scenarios, always, almost always, missing point how dirty it is going to be. Mm. Because we are plugged into society where everything is work. So we don't really see how dirty can be when system is out. It is very dirty. It is horrible.
Yeah, and you mentioned going down to the lake, you might get shot by a sniper.
Yes, it is horribly dirty, and that leads to medical problems. So hygiene items were valuable, and medical items were valuable. I need to mention, when I say luxury items, I don't think necessary here about gold, let's say. I think more about comfort items. So in sometimes simple a bottle of beer worth a world to you because it connected you. I'm talking about me, actually. It connected me to the normal time.
Right.
So I did pay a lot for simple bottle of beer few times, and in other situation for simple chocolate, because it wasn't available for a very long time, and so items like that connected you psychologically to normal times and gave you that, let's say, that small amount of hope that there is still a normal world and normal times somewhere and sometimes in future, if this makes sense.
So what I hear is, because a lot of things that American preppers, we do focus on is trade barter items. And some of the things a lot of, you know, preppers put back is, of course, alcohol, cigarettes, candy, that, you know, like a hard candy kind of stuff. So that kind of stuff does make a huge difference. And when you're in the, you know, the SHTF, correct? Is that what you're saying?
Of course. There are, when people discuss about barter, usually on forums, on blogs, on pages, survival pages, I see a lot of like, here's a list what you will be missing when SHTF. And there's a list of everything. There is not too much sense in that, because what you will be missing when SHTF, you will be missing everything. But you need to point out what is more important to you. So you might be, of course, you'll be missing your car magazine papers when SHTF. But is it a life-threatening situation? No. You need to store much more water than your magazines. This is a ridiculous example, but you get my point. When you go to the psychology and mentality of barter, of prepping for barter, I can say from my experience, what makes sense to store for barter are small items in more numbers, because of many reasons, because of security, because of security of carrying it, because of security and safety of storing it. So you, for example, 50 kilos of rice, if it is going to be spoiled, it is going to be spoiled all, but 50 or 20 packages or 2.5 kilos can be spoiled a couple of packages, if that makes sense. And it is much easier to carry 10 lighters for trade than 10 liters of gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
So small items that are important.
Gotcha.
Everything is important, of course, but some things are more important than other items. So more important are cans of food than bottles of beer. So that means store more cans of food than bottles of beer. But just like I mentioned, even that beer have a price, and sometimes it can be very high. What I suggest when it comes to storing and bartering, it is a huge topic, of course, but I do not really divide storing for barter from storing for yourself, because you are doubling items and you can make mistakes. So store what you are going to, what you conclude that makes sense, what you're going to need, because imagine what all other people around you will need that same items, so you will be able to barter. Just go deeper into the mentality of carrying that, packaging that, storing that, and be careful about who knows what you have and where you have that.
So I would think that skills of hiding things and skills of getting to the place that you've hidden things is very important, because you just can't. You're more mobile, especially, it sounds like you are pretty mobile within the city, but, and you don't want to put all your items in the corner of your room. But I would think that that skill of hiding things, being able to just, maybe even in plain sight, or even getting to that place and getting your items out, is pretty important.
It is huge, actually. And again, we are coming here to one statement that I often hear in preppers, especially in U.S. preppers, and it goes like this: I will never leave my home. I will defend it to my death. Basically, it is a wrong statement, because Eventually you will die. Yep. Do not expect to be a stronger guy in city. Eventually we'll die. Rephrase that to the statement that goes like this: I will be ready to leave my home in split second and still have available preps somewhere hidden. Or rephrase it to the point where I'll be ready for the forces, let's say government forces, who will come to my house and find part of my stash and take away from me, but bigger part of cash is hidden. So my words are this: survival is not about losing your life. Survival is about surviving. Be ready to lose everything except your life.
Okay.
That's real statement.
And you also mentioned in some of your, I know in a podcast that I was listening to, you made a statement that, you know, we have this American version of the, you know, the SHTF, but you said surviving in the SHTF, this is a note I wrote down, when it becomes your number one job every single minute of the day. Even military people don't really survive like that. They get breaks and times off, but in the SHTF, you're literally full time on trying to survive every single minute, and there is no time off.
It is connected again to the simple fact that most of people do not understand how deeply we are plugged into the system, and how much benefits system is giving to us together with wrong things. So only one day when that system is gone, I realized how much help I had from that system. From the simple carrying and dragging whole bunch of water canisters to my house, to the chopping the woods or finding the food, heating myself and everything. So most of my time during the day and night was filling the gaps, filling that jobs of regular everyday work in order to keep my home and myself running and alive. In short, surviving is not only about running and shooting someone. Most of the surviving actually is about hard work. And as better group you have, with more skills between each member of that group, your everyday life will be easier. Again, most of the stuff in that time I learned on my own mistakes. But if you have knowledge between your group and your group member or yourself, you will not make that mistakes, and your everyday life will be hard, of course, but it will be easier. Forget about laying down and watching how world is going to the end from your safe spot. Mm-hmm. You can do that for some time if you are very, very well prepared. Actually, I do advise to do that for some time, because before a situation outside go to the moment where you realize who is who and what is really happening. But eventually you will have to go outside and plug yourself in that new world, because no matter how big storage you have, that storage will go empty at the end. And it is better to go out and learn who is who before that storage go empty. But to go back to your original question, yes, it is hard job for most of the day, especially if you are alone or not prepared. It is next to impossible.
So let me ask you this question. Equipment is very important, like having a weapon and food and water and everything. But it when you look back, what skills were the most needed or the most useful during that time?
Yes, I would point out two most of the important in that time. And I can call it like this, killer and healer, if that makes sense to you. Skills of either to kill or to heal, if you understand me.
Yep.
But that's only, that is only tip of the problem. Based on my problems, you need to have men who know how to grow food. You need to have men who know how to work with people, because what that mean? Well, I would say that best scenario is if you can have something like a psychologist in your group. But what I'm trying to say here is you need to have somebody who know how to work with problems, mental problems that people will have in that kind of situation.
Wow.
Men who know how to talk with people, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because all of us have problems, and we did have one older guy who was almost illiterate, but know how to talk with us based on his experience. So let me rephrase it like this. You need to have fighting skills, medical skills, food growing skills. You need to have some kind of negotiating skills, because eventually you will find yourself into the negotiating with other armed and dangerous people, either through trade or any other subject. You need to have somebody who know how to organize all of that. Otherwise, you will end up in simple, let's say, armed mob. You need to have a technical guy, or how we call it in that times, guy who know how to repair things, or how to rebuild things so they can work. You need to have also a guy who can organize all of stuff in kitchen. When I say all of that, in my time, it was a person who know how to make food from the simple grass and small amount of flour. It tasted awful, but it make you working. It make you alive, if that makes sense. So if you look through these skills, what I suggest to folks who organize group, each member of the group need to have basic from all of these skills. So everybody needs to know how to shoot, of course. Everybody needs to know how to do basic trauma assessment, for example, or how to plug some wounds or something like that. But you need to have member who knows some of those skills in depth, if that makes sense. These are not, it is huge topic, but you get my philosophy of group building here. Everybody needs to have basics, but you need to have a person who knows all of this in depth. Of course, best case scenario will be that, that everybody, have knowledge in depth from all of these skills, but we are living in real world. It is almost impossible. I need to add something here really important, because we do a lot of real physical courses. We find out and already know that from before, of course, but most of the preppers do not know that. You do not need to have special Navy SEAL members of your group. If you have it, great, but you will not have it because, again, okay, we are living in real life. What you will have, what most of the people will have is their father or his son, girlfriend, or his mother-in-law, maybe. You need to find skills from each of those members, no matter how they look not skilled to you. In our survival course, we do find out not once that older lady have perfect organization skills in taking care about home, or guy who works as a programmer and who doesn't have any real fighting skill has perfect negotiation skill during the trade. What I'm trying to say, it is possible to build a survival group like in movies. And you do not have to aim to that. We are talking about real survival, real people with own flaws. Is that correct word? With own minuses. So worked based on what you have, and you will be able to build group with that.
So some of the skills you're saying are just either common sense skills or negotiating, working with other people, intangible skills, meaning it's hard to kind of teach people these skills. It's just, but would you still say that survival skills are, I mean, they're important for sure, but I think you're taking that as a given that everyone in the group needs to have basic survival skills like first aid, working their gun, and you know, how to purify water. That's skills that everyone needs to know, correct?
Yes. Yep. Those are skills. Let's say you can learn how to purify water from YouTube. You right. can learn how to start fire from YouTube. Those are all basic skills, and I don't really see a reason why anybody can learn that. Mm-hmm. Skills that are more in depth can, for example, from weapons and fighting, can have your member of group who is veteran. But when you are building your survival group, something that is really important is mindset. You need to have a mindset of each member and collective mindset. And I do not talking here about something that is psychedelic or something like that. It is simple, good old mindset where you have group of people that are in essence good and ready. Ready to learn and ready to cope with problems, but again, that are that have some kind of moral code. That moral code need to be a common thing for all of you in order to that group to work. Because you can't have a member of group that have views on life or moral code absolutely and completely different than you. It can work for some time, but eventually that can bring your group into the danger. I'm not talking here necessarily about well, political view. You can have different political view. Sometimes it can get you to fight, but I'm talking here about a moral code of the member that you can call evil or wrong or right. simple not good.
Okay. So in your book, you also talk about, I think it's, if I remember right, it's the five things that surprised you the most. And I'm going to read them real quick. And then if you can comment, if you want to, just tell me if I'm right. Is because you kind of had to, I took the notes here. One, how close the actual action, the fight is near you. Number two is the enemy is your neighbor. They're literally, they look, speak, and, just like you. Number three was how busy your day was, which you talked about that a little bit about. You're always doing some work. Number four was the level of threat. It's like at any moment you can almost like die. And I'm just, I took these out of your book kind of thing as I was reading it. And number five was, we think we're ready to fight, but we have no clue what this is like unless you live through it like yourself. We've glorified it. So that's your five biggest surprises of going through this.
Yes. How close? I lived through this, in city that is quite, architecturally, if I can say, buildings are very close. So when everything broke up, literally, people were fighting, in apartment building from one apartment to other apartment. And, people that there was a 15 or 16 story apartment building high. And it was, full of holes between apartments and room from different apartments. So it was turned to some kind of maze. So, fight was, nightmare. So you could never be sure from where danger was coming because danger might come from if you find yourself in partial destroyed building, danger might come from hole in the ceiling that somebody made and wait from you.
Oh.
So if you entering building one room, 99.9% of people do not look for the hole in ceiling. They look from the windows, doors, and other openings. And there is a new danger hole in the ceiling. So, and close fight, that mean, house, from house to house, even from apartment to apartment, because it was densely populated area and that, and even enemy armies were fighting from street to street, and even local militias went fighting from street to street. And inside that, you had common folks that wanted to take something from you. Everything was so close. Second point was enemy,
speak and looks like you.
Yes. this is very important. Again, especially for Americans, American preppers, not only US preppers, but I see that, let's say illusion, mostly in US preppers. There is some kind of illusion that somehow foreign troops or UN troops or whoever will invade US, and you will fight, foreign troops. Over there. Well, in theory, it is possible, of course. In reality, how possible is that some foreign troop invade U.S. Strongest army in the world with most armed citizen, I believe, in the world. It is next to impossible. Whoever would invade U.S. Would lose very, very, soon. So people imagine UN troops, going door to door or sub foreign troops, while real danger, and I have to put it like this, real danger coming from your neighbor, real danger might come from your government. Let me put it this more clear. You can be portrayed as a terrorist, if you are prepper. You can be portrayed as a enemy of the state if your views on some important events is different than majority of population. You can be portrayed as a danger, as a danger, and you could be collected and imprisoned from your own government. Mm-hmm. So for a start, I would look to keep my OPSEC, to the system, no matter how that system look friendly or not friendly to you today. You can be portrayed from the system as a terrorist by the simple fact that you are prepper. Let's face it. Not to mention other topics. Other thing, you can be invaded from your first neighbor, just like we mentioned it before. If your system collapsed from whatever reason and a system of punishment from the law is out, you can be portrayed as a threat from your neighbor because you have something that he do not have and he need really hard. Medication, food, whatever. So your neighbor will invade you. There's a huge chance that he will invade you. So we are coming back to the fact that, your enemy most probably will come very close, to you, either from your neighborhood or, either from your own government. It doesn't have to be lack of the food. I mean, face the reality. Today can rioting happen in your neighborhood, and if you do not support some political option, like majority of people who are rioting, they can torch your house. We are coming to the reality of that, I believe, in these days, months, and years, that your own neighbors can attack you because your political opinion is different than his. So, yeah, look for the enemy much closer than you. I'm not saying that you do not have to pay attention to the world situation. Of course, you need to pay attention to what is happening between Russia and Ukraine, but only to the terms that look over there and imagine and take educated guess how that can influence to your own small circle situation at home. For example, how that can turn how war in Ukraine can make your country poorer, and how you can lose your own job because of war over there, how that can bring to fall of some political option of rioting in your city. I think you get what I'm trying to say here.
Yes. Yep. So yeah, our enemy more than likely is our neighbor, not a force coming in America. America has a little different situation than a lot of countries. America, every other household has like three guns.
Yes, so that's the reason why there is nobody invading America, and whoever is invading, it is suicide.
Yeah, it's suicide. Did you have a weapon when you were in going through this?
Yes. Actually, I obtained a weapon very soon when this happened. It was simple pistol, and later I obtained AK. Later I obtained more weapon.
Okay.
Situation with weapon in that time, it was, in first moment, through the chaos, you could find a weapon when barracks, dissolved. In that chaos, you could find weapon. But prior to that, it was different situation than let's say in US. We didn't own, or state didn't allow us to own so much weapon like for example you have in US. Now, is that good or bad thing? I lean more to good thing over there. That, let me rephrase it. I admire your right over there to own weapon. I like that very much. To have weapons, yeah, I like that very much. Now, to the point of situation on the ground, when something happened on the ground, that means that everybody have weapon, not only you. That means that we are coming back to the point of organization, because when everybody have weapon, it is let's say close to nobody have weapon.
I'm not sure that makes sense.
Yes. But again, I admire your right to have weapons, and I would practice it a lot, and in big numbers and in depth.
Wow. Okay.
Not in depth, in deep, if that makes sense. Depth is other word, I just realized. Deep, but again, there is some kind of system in owning weapon, which is other topic. I have to mention this because there is whole culture about piling weapon. I would go without storing exotic weapon. I would go with storing weapon that is common in my area because of a lot of other reason and stuff like that. But to keep it simple, of course, have a weapon in good numbers. Yes.
Okay, we're getting kind of to the end here. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Next question is, as the situation was becoming more peaceful and people started trusting everyone, how did that work out? I mean, at what point did everyone, or could you, was it a movement? At what point did you go, okay, it's safer, supplies are coming in? How did that whole transaction happen? And was there still mistrust during all that?
Well, there's a still mistrust even 30 years ago after that.
Oh, wow.
It is slow process. I mean, nobody's shooting at anybody right now. There is always danger and chance that there will be shooting because this is very fragile society with a lot of hate and dangers, but it was long process, and it was forced process from international troops. Actually, one day international troops landed and forced us to stop shooting at each other. If I can say it simple like that, but process of animosity between us, process of hate and everything else, that's still that is I can say ongoing process, and I'm not really optimistic about that. I can say that when somebody asked me about future SHDF, I can say that we still had some kind of luck, because our collapse was stopped by intervention from outside. War stopped. But we managed to build some kind of, let's say, crooked society where everything work on bribe and stuff like that. That's completely other topic. But in case of some big SHDF situation, I don't see some real outside intervention or stopping all of that. I just see spiraling down and us as a humanity being brought down to the 100 or 200 years back, and survival of I wouldn't say fittest, I would say survival of most organized groups. Mm. Now, I'm mentioning this as a worst case worldwide event scenario. But as a smaller scale and more localized scenario, again, I see smaller groups of survivalists surviving until situation go back to the normal. And I'll be honest, in my case, it lasted for 5 years, almost 5 years. So be aware that can be maybe month, but maybe 10 months, maybe a couple of years, maybe 10 years. We are now going into the region of different scenarios of what Dang. We can expect.
Wow. Well, listen, that's about all the time. I mean, I could sit here and ask you questions all day. you ever come to America, I'm meeting you at the airport. I'm just telling you, you got so much knowledge and so much. I mean, it's crazy to be able to actually talk to someone that's kind of lived through it. You know, that's kind of like it resets your mind and you go, wow, okay, it's okay. I'm preparing, but I'm not, it's hard to prepare what you've been through. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Just for the end, I need to add something because I started to add that because people commented, oh, it was so bad that that's so bad what you're talking about that I'm not sure am I going to be able to go through that. So I started to add after at the end of each interview, add this, you can survive. You just need to be organized. Remember, I was common man. Very young men and people with me were common folks, not survivalists. It was horrible. It was bad, but you can survive. It is possible to survive even that kind of event if you have good people with you. Let's keep it like that. So it is possible.
That's awesome. That's good, encouraging words. It may be hell, but we can survive is what you're kind
of saying. Yes, definitely.
And so everyone, this is Selco. Hey, his website is shtfschool.com. And don't you have like online courses on there and everything that you can train people?
Yes, yes, yes. I do that for a couple of years. Yes, I do.
And you have books you've written. I know the book that the one that I kind of just I've read twice now, The Dark Secret. Dark Secrets is SHTF Survival.
Yes.
It's on Amazon, and you've written a couple other books too, correct?
Yes, there are also over there at Amazon, and you can check it on my webpage.
Yeah, go to his website, shtfschool.com, sign up for his class, read his books, and he's on other podcasts as well, because, you know, not every podcaster asks the best questions or whatever, but I've been fascinated with your story. I've been fascinated with your survival story, and there's so much to learn from that. You know, it's impressive too that you just decided to share this information because there's so many stories that people have, they don't share them, but you've kind of put yourself out there and sharing the truth of what SHTF survival is all about. And we appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I think people need to know how real stuff look and how real stuff might look.
For right.
Them. Yes.
And I'd love to get your commitment. I'd love to interview you again. I've got more questions. We just don't have time for, but thank you for being on the podcast and thank you for sharing your story and also, you know, through the podcast and also through your books and also your teaching. Again, you can find Selco at shtfschool.com. So make sure you go and visit. Hey, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity and stay safe.
Yes. Yes. Thank you very much. Hey guys on the podcast, thank you for joining me. We will, join us. Make sure you like and follow. Give me 5 stars, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.